are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
After the destruction of the second Death Star, the First Galactic Empire was in disarray. As a government, their legitimacy and credibility was reduced to the ashes of its superweapon. With their tail between their legs, relegated to the Outer Rim, the Imperials continued to fight their war against the New Republic, who they still pejoratively called the Rebellion. Under the leadership of Admiral Natassi Dalla, protege and mistress of the late Wilhuff Tarkin. The power vacuum left by the deaths of Darth Vader, Emperor Palpatine, and Grand Admiral Thrawn was almost impossible to fill, and the Empire was divided with infighting and rivalries being commonplace. And though Dalla was the ruler, she was in a politically and militarily weak position, which could not be sustained due to a loss on the battlefield in a campaign against the New Republic. She would ultimately relinquish control to her second-in-command, Gilad Pelion. Pelion was politically much more moderate, for an Imperial that is, and also humble, as it was never a position he aspired to have. In many ways, this made him the perfect candidate to reunite the Empire, as the Moffs who controlled the sectors in the mid and outer rims found his leadership acceptable and grew tired of the cult of personality that defined previous rulers. He even brought in many reforms like abolishing slavery and giving non-human sentience more rights. Early in his administration, he even scored a number of military victories against the Republic, cementing his leadership with the Council of Moffs, making him invulnerable to political attacks by the Imperial hardliners who did not appreciate the liberal reforms. Pelion's new invigorated regime would be referred to as the, quote, Imperial Remnant. His early success would not last forever, though, as he would ultimately lose a number of key sectors to the New Republic, forcing him to find détente with the adversary. In 22 BBY, the Remnant would sign a peace treaty with the Republic, vowing to end hostilities indefinitely. The warming relationship between the former foes would not end here, however. The threat of the Yuuzhan Vong now threatened the galaxy. Chief of State Leia Organa went on an urgent diplomatic mission to the Imperials to propose a military alliance, which Pelion ultimately accepted. The Remnant became a member state of the Galactic Alliance, and Pelion even served as the Grand Admiral of its fleet, signaling an unprecedented level of cooperation between the Empire and the Republic. This level of camaraderie would not last forever, as the Sith had still been lurking in the shadows of the Empire, and the hard-line Moffs who longed for a return to the old Empire. A second galactic civil war would eventually break out, and a new Empire was being formed in its wake by a young upstart named Jagged Fell.
An Empire Resurrected.
Son of the legendary starfighter pilot, Suntor Fell, Jagged was practically born into the military with a renowned family name to live up to. He was raised in the unknown regions, among the Chiss, in an environment of discipline, duty, and loyalty to the Empire, joining the Chiss Academy as soon as he was eligible. By the age of 18, he had achieved the rank of colonel, unprecedented for someone of his age, and not long after that, he was deployed to the Republic space to assist in fending off the Yuuzhan'vong threat. It was here he grew close in relationship with Wedge Antilles and Jaina Solo, whom he would eventually begin a romance with. After the war, however, Vel was recalled to the Chiss Ascendancy to serve as a fleet captain in a war effort against an insectoid race called the Killix. Jagged would eventually lose favor with the Chiss for a series of misadventures that occurred and would be exiled from the Ascendancy, for which he dedicated much of his life. He had some unfinished business with the Killix and wanted to exterminate a dark side influence faction called the Dark Nest. The Jedi Council also had an interest in the mission and agreed to assist him, sending Jaina to help root out the Vagabonds. When the Second Galactic Civil War broke out, sparked by Darth Cadus' alliance with the disaffected Imperial and Republic factions, Fel would be instrumental in helping to defeat the Dark Lord's power grab. Darth Cadus, who was Jaina's brother, formerly known as Jacen Solo, would die by his sister's hand, thus ending the conflict. Because of Jagged's help, he would become ingratiated with the highly influential Solo and Skywalker families, even marrying Jaina. During the negotiations around the restructuring of a post-war Republic and Empire, Luke Skywalker lobbied the Council of Moths to select Jagged as the new Emperor, thus establishing the beginning of the Fel Dynasty. The marriage of Jaina Solo, who was royalty in her own right, and Jagged Fel would cement the close relationship between the Republic and the Empire for a century to come. The former bitter rivals would now be the closest of allies. Jagged also introduced a number of reforms to his regime. Chief among them was establishing a hereditary monarchy. Since its inception, the Galactic Empire suffered from fierce and often violent competition for who had the legitimate right to be emperor. This led to fracturing, civil war, and disarray, as few people were able to hold power for very long before being assassinated, mutinied, or overthrown in uprisings. By becoming the Empire's monarch, a position which would be inherited by his kin, he was able to put an end to the power struggles that existed, finally bringing order to the chaos. Though he was sovereign for life, he did find detente with the Moths and allowed them to keep a considerable amount of control over their society, and could be viewed as the second branch of government. Another major shift was the victory without war policy. This doctrine basically stated that the Empire would expand not through military conquest, but through galactic aid and economic relationships, convincing worlds to join them through benevolence rather than might. This was especially effective in the aftermath of the Yuuzhan'vong War, which left many planets in dire poverty and destitution. Though Jagged did keep a number of cultural artifacts, like powerful, well-funded military and navy, a hyper-focus on the orderly society, and general, albeit toned-down xenophobia, one of the most radical of his reforms was allowing the light side of the Force to be practiced inside the Empire.
The Imperial Knights. In his newly formed empire, Jagged had a nostalgia for the Palpatine regime, despite his close ties with Luke Skywalker and the Republic. He was particularly enamored with the Red Guard, the former Emperor's highly specialized security detail, which had donned red armor, a face covering, and a Force pike. Taking inspiration from the Red Guard, but putting a new spin on it, Jagged established the Imperial Knights, a team of highly trained, elite combatants who could also wield the Force. Like their predecessors before them, they also wore red armor. However, they did not cover their faces, and they wielded lightsabers as opposed to Force pikes. The Knights, though not members of the Jedi Order, explicitly rejected the dark side of the Force. Indeed, perhaps their highest loyalty would not be to the Force, but to the Emperor. Joining the Knights was a lifelong commitment, and leaving them was punishable by death. Possibly at the behest of Luke Skywalker and Jaina Solo Fel, The Knights were prohibited from practicing the dark side as a matter of policy. In fact, Jagged made it a rule that should an emperor ever fall to the dark side, it was the knight's duty to convert him to the path of light, and should the emperor fail to submit, the knight will carry out his execution, thus adding an insurance policy to the imperial throne should it ever be supplanted by a Sith. The regiment was a highly disciplined and skilled fighting force, and they carried out other tasks that went above and beyond protection of the monarch, as they would take on special missions, both diplomatic and military, in service of the Empire. This was a marked difference from their progenitors who served Palpatine, who for the most part served as the Emperor's personal security detail. Unlike the Jedi Order, which recruited young children as Padawans, all apprentices with the Imperial Knights were adults who merely had to exhibit considerable combat prowess, some force aptitude, and most importantly, an undying loyalty to the Emperor. The apprentice would come under the tutelage of a veteran knight, with whom he would train until it was determined he was ready to himself be knighted. Jagged Fell made it so that no one could fail to become a knight once they had become an apprentice, that they would train and prepare until they were ready, even if it took decades. Though there were a small number of masters in the Order, it was not very heavily emphasized as with the Jedi. As their philosophy stated, they served only one master, the Emperor. Most often, the title was given to the first and second in command of the Order, and on occasion to highly skilled specialists like the Master Armorer. All knights wielded a standardized silver lightsaber and red armor. Though they were certainly highly proficient with lightsabers, they did not solely focus on them, as they also trained in grenadier tactics, blaster skills, and the use of vehicles and other large weapons. They were expected to be competent and well-rounded in a wide range of battle scenarios. Their final weapon was the Force, which they must have mastered in order to become a knight. Though they may not have been as powerful in the Force as many Jedi or Sith, to the point that some Sith even refer to them as Fell's Forcelings. Though Imperial Knights were not allowed to succumb to the dark side, they were permitted to practice some dark force techniques, and many of them had no strong feelings towards the dark side or the light, as they viewed the force as a means to an end and not an end in itself. Luke Skywalker's new Jedi Order often described them as, quote, gray Jedi. Though accurate, they never referred to themselves as such, nor did they take an ideologically gray position.
The Sith Imperial War.
A century had passed, and the Fell Empire had established itself as an economic and military powerhouse, much stronger and more powerful than it had been when Jagged's dynasty was established. Things were generally peaceful between the Empire and the Galactic Alliance, coexisting in relative harmony. But the unprecedented era of cooperation would soon come to an end, as the Sith had returned to become a disruptive force in the galaxy yet again. A new dark Jedi Order, who went by The One Sith, had arisen out of the shadows, led by their charismatic leader, Darth Krayt. In the events that led to the war, the Jedi Order, in partnership with the Yuuzhan Vong, had been working on the Osis Project, a terraforming enterprise intended to restore many of the worlds that had been devastated during the Yuuzhan Vong War. It was politically very divisive, and many of the sectors in both the Empire and the Republic felt very uneasy about using Vong technology as the wounds of the catastrophic war still bled. The suspicions did not end there, however, as some were concerned this would be a Trojan horse that the Vong could use to reemerge as a galactic threat. Darth Krayt's One Sith agents sabotaged the Osis project, causing a mutation on one of the terraformed planets, Wayland, to create a plague. Chaos ensued, and the plague spread to every single terraformed planet, killing and maiming millions. The project was abruptly ended, and the political fallout had begun, as dozens of systems seceded from the Galactic Alliance and implemented a number of anti-Vong policies. The Jedi maintained the innocence of the Vong, but could not prove sabotage. The Empire, out of expediency, seized on this opportunity and convened the Moff Council. The hardliner Moffs, nostalgic for the reign of Palpatine, had long been critical of the Empire's cozy relationship with the Alliance, and now had political wind in their sails. They swiftly invoked the Treaty of Anaxes and declared war on the Republic over charges of bioterrorism. Emperor Rhone Fell objected to this and wanted to find a more diplomatic and moderate solution, but he was overruled by a strong majority in his council, and he was grudgingly forced to lead his empire into war. Despite this, he still had full executive control over the Imperial Knights and forbade them from participating in the war, thus avoiding an inevitable conflict with their light side kin, the Jedi Order. 1 year into the campaign, the Empire began suffering serious defeats and were losing ground despite the fact that the Alliance had been severely damaged by widespread secession movements in their own territory. It was the Jedi who were able to turn the tides of war in the Alliance's favor. Because Rhone Fell banned the use of Imperial Knights, the Empire had no counter to the Force-using specialists. The Sith, however, were still lurking in the shadows, waiting for the most opportune time to unveil themselves. Krayt had caught the ear of many sympathetic Moffs, and as the war was beginning to go against the Empire, the Moffs forged a strategic alliance with the One Sith in order to salvage their hopes of victory. After finally being revealed, the Sith started going mano a mano with the Jedi on the battlefield. Once again, Rhone, who loathed the dark side, protested against the decision of the Moffs to ally themselves to the Sith, and it was finally becoming clear to him that the Sith must have orchestrated the false flag event on the Osis project in the first place, handing Darth Krayt an incredible amount of leverage. After 3 long years of bitter fighting, the final straw was at the Battle of Kamas, where the Sith Imperial fleet was able to deliver a crushing blow to the Alliance fleet, spelling out the end of the war. Though some of the Alliance vessels did survive, they were reduced to a small vagabond group of starships fighting small skirmishes against the Empire, refusing to surrender, not unlike Skywalker's rebellion in times of old. Be that as it may, the Sith Imperial fleet descended upon Coruscant and accepted the Alliance's unconditional surrender, thus absorbing all of Alliance space into the Empire. Rhone Fell extended an open invitation to any Jedi of the Order to be accepted into the ranks of the Imperial Knights. This was partly to offer amnesty as retribution from the Sith, who held considerable political clout with the Moffs, was no doubt coming. Though many did accept the offer, many still could not tolerate being allied to the Sith, and thus were scattered throughout the galaxy to go into hiding.
A splintered empire.
The honeymoon period that came after the Empire's victory was to be short-lived. On a supposed diplomatic mission to Ossus, the home of the Jedi, to negotiate terms of the new regime, Krayt had other plans. He used the mission as a cover to sneak in his Sith warriors on the planet, where they would murder every last Jedi, removing any obstacles to his iron rule, and paving the way to commit a coup d'etat against Rhone Fell, thus crowning himself Emperor. It was a bloodbath, and the grisly events would later be called the Massacre at Ossus, or the Third Jedi Purge by others. Unlike attempts at genocide against the Jedi in the past, this one could hardly be called a success, as nearly half the entire Order had already fled and scattered throughout space in protest of joining the new Empire. was still enough, though, to leave little resistance against Krayt's attempts at the throne, save Fel's Imperial Knights. Later, during a gathering of the Moths and the Emperor in his Imperial Chamber, is where the Dark Lord decided to make his move. After assassinating the man on the throne in the presence of all the Moths, Darth Krayt demonstrated his power in swift fashion, cementing the coup d'etat. The one wrinkle in his plan, however, is that the man on the throne was a decoy, and not, in fact, Emperor Ronan Fel. Fel was one step ahead of Krayt, and had already fled the planet with his Imperial Knights. Rowan soon embarked on a political campaign to rally as many Moths, Jedi, and former Alliance officials to his cause to resist the new Krayt regime. In a short period of time, the Empire had once again been splintered into two warring factions, those loyal to the Fel dynasty and those who made their allegiance with Krayt and the Sith, in what was called the Second Imperial Civil War. Darth Krayt's empire would be referred to as the One Sith Rule, while Fel's would be called the Empire in Exile. The war was brutal and lasted 8 years, with no clear victor wresting full control over Imperial space. The conflict would ultimately find its conclusion very much near where it all began, the skies over Coruscant. Rowan Fel had begun to get desperate to end Krayt's rule, and had developed a bioweapon called Omega Red, which was intended to end the Dark Lord's reign through a scorched earth policy that would wipe out most of the life on the planet. However, the Imperial Knight Antares Draco, a trusted Fel loyalist, urged the Emperor not to do it, and that he should trust the Force to take care of Krayt. But Rowan was blinded by his hatred and had fallen to the dark side, and continued with the plan, even physically subduing Draco so that he could not be stopped. But the Knight was not completely incapacitated, and in a final attempt to stop Fel, he stabbed him in the back, killing him, thus carrying out his imperial duty to kill any Emperor who falls prey to darkness. Around the same time, Krayt had been killed by Cade Skywalker, and with leaders of both factions dead, it would mark the end of the war.
An ending and beginning.
With the death of the Empire's leader, it was Ronan's daughter, Marassia Fel, who would assume the Emperor's mantle, though for all intents and purposes, the Fel Empire was over. Just prior to the conclusion of the war, Ronan had worked out an alliance with the New Jedi Council and the Galactic Alliance Remnant in order to resist the One Sith rule, called the Galactic Federation Triumvirate, with all three parties being equal parties. It was this triumvirate that would form the new galactic government in the wake of the Civil War, reestablishing trade, rebuilding war-torn worlds, and rehabilitating galactic infrastructure. The Fel dynasty would continue, perhaps in a more ceremonial role, as one part of the three government branches. Marassia, or Sia for short, would bring in a number of reforms, especially with the Imperial Knights, mandating that they exclusively swear fealty to the light side of the Force, becoming pseudo-Jedi faction of their own. Though they were still employed in service of the throne, their first loyalty would be to the light side, as to help root out any possible resurgence of the Sith. This area was ostensibly the last known galactic empire in the legendary history of the galaxy far, far away.
Now, a word from our sponsors.
Do you not like sand? Are you tired of its coarseness and getting all over your starship? Do you hate the tedious chore of cleaning cosmic grime off your halls and windows? Look no further than the superior cleaning services of It's a Wash. Led by Mon Cala's greatest sanitation workers, your satisfaction is guaranteed as we do the hard work for you to ensure a clean and prestigious ship enough to earn the Empire's envy. It's a Wash, coming to Waterworld near you. Call ahead of time while openings last. Fleet discounts may apply. Disclaimer, due to our protocols, please ensure all holes are sealed to prevent improper leaks while the ship is submerged.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show. Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Jordan.
And this is Christian.
We are here flying above Ossus as we are going to visit the Ossus Genocide Museum.
And the wreckage of the old Jedi Temple.
Yep.
It's a very somber time and place. Also to reflect on the last stories of this franchise.
Indeed. The end. And I'd also like to say, and I know we've said it before, but this time it's actually true. The Fell Empire did nothing wrong. Okay. We kind of joke about it with the Palpatine Empire, but I think it's a little more true with the Fell Empire. They were kind of a kinder, gentler empire. They weren't as sadistic, and they brought in a lot of human rights reforms.
Sure. I want to agree with you, but also, like, being not as bad doesn't also mean you're good, though.
That's true.
For the record.
It is true. I think they were, let's just say, less brutal the way they ruled. They were still, by our standards, would still be tyrannical, but, like,
coming from where they were to where they are, you have to give them credit for.
Yeah, it's going from, like, I don't know, North Korea to, like, Russia or something. You
Post-Stalin Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's not great, but it's, like,
better than it was. Yeah. Is that what our standards are,
I guess, pretty much,
these days?
So, obviously, we're getting into the Fell Dynasty, the Fell Empire. So much of this era was written by John Ostrander. He headed the Star Wars Legacy era, which is what this era is. And he's also the one who wrote Dawn of the Jedi 25,000 years prior to the Battle of Yavin. So he kind of has a lot of experience writing way before and way after.
Yeah, he pretty much bookends the entire Legends universe.
That's right.
With like the very beginning and the very end. Mm-hmm. And he has lots of stuff in between. Like, he's a big writer on the Republic series.
Yep.
He worked on the actual films, Episode 2 and Revenge of the Sith. So he's intimately familiar with the material.
Yeah. He's definitely one of these characters who really understands the Star Wars universe, has worked for them for a long time. You know, not unlike a Filoni or a Timothy Zahn or someone. Yeah. You know?
Someone who really appreciates the universe for what it is. And
yeah.
And I like that he understands it enough that he's also willing to get experimental with it. Because that's where the weirdest stuff is at the very beginning, at the very end.
Yeah.
You know, like where they really try to get off the rails. And...
So that's the thing is, I think if you're like, perhaps if you're just coming out of like, you just saw the movies and that's the only thing you ever experienced of Star Wars. If you read some of Ostrander's work, it could possibly be a bit jarring.
Yeah, it'd be alienating.
Yeah, it's very different. But I don't think it's different in a bad way. I think it's different in a good way. And the eras in which he's writing, they're so removed in time that it is believable that
it allows you enough freedom to
exactly
change things.
And he was able to like sort of because there was that much time removed, and he wasn't like he did write about a little bit about Luke and the Solos and stuff, but
their descendants make appearances as well.
Yeah,
the main characters in the stories.
But that's the thing is his big thing was really their descendants. So
yeah.
It wasn't so much touching the already established characters. It was to him
creating
new characters, right? Yeah. And that's really what I think he excelled at. I'm super appreciative. I think he did a good job. In subsequent interviews, he has like stated that he wanted to make the Fel Empire like. He explicitly stated this, that he didn't want just like the typical cartoonish bad guy.
Yeah.
He wanted them to be like maybe kind of an anti-hero, but also not the worst.
A grayer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It put them in a gray area. So like obviously as we went through this and as he's explicitly stated, like he wanted to, make you think about if you really liked this empire or not, right?
Yeah.
I think that's cool. And that's a good way to do it because I think it is a little bit tired to just do the same thing over and over again.
Which, like, I hate to jump into it this early in the episode, but to contrast with Disney's recycling of the empire and the rebellion again, right?
Like, yeah,
we've seen it, we've done it, we don't need to repeat that.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's what I really love about Legacy is, although there's lots of familiarity, we still have the empire, we still have the Sith and the Jedi to a lesser extent. There's these new takes on them. There's this like moral gray exploration, right? There's a lot of different, I mean, even Cade Skywalker.
Yeah, he's like the last Skywalker.
Yeah, but like even him as a character,
he kills Crait.
Yeah, but he isn't this like noble hero figure, right? He's got his dark side.
Right, yeah. And we did do an episode on Cade. So.
Yeah, and Crait for that matter.
Yeah, and Crait. So people can always go back and listen to those ones.
To get a better overall context.
I agree. Even Cade Skywalker is sort of almost like a Solo.
Yeah, like he's not this paragon like Luke was.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and that seems to be the across the board kind of what Ostrander's take is with this, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, so this was actually like the sort of like the second, the Sith Imperial Civil War and the events that happened after that and sort of the end of the Fel Empire. This was actually like one of the last story arcs
ever
in Legends before Disney acquired it. So it's sort of sad that it kind of ended here because they were trying to set it up for more.
Yeah.
And from everything I have read from digging around, they absolutely had plans to keep developing this era, but it just, because of the Disney acquisition, everything.
It just killed it.
Yeah. Everything got retconned.
Which is tragic. I remember I was a huge fan of the Legacy comics and my brothers and I would buy the issues as they were releasing.
Oh, did you?
It's very rare for me to be that interested in your story.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it would have been interesting to see like this new, another interpretation, like this Trivium.
Triumvirate.
Triumvirate, yeah, sorry. the triumvirate with like these like the Jedi Order, the Fell Empire, dynasty, and the Galactic Alliance, like making the new government. It's kind of
how they would make decisions. I have a feeling that he probably would have gone with like a Rome.
Yeah.
The Roman triumvirate. There'd be all this like political backstabbing.
Okay.
And
so there,
and then eventually, I'm just guessing based on history and the use of the word.
So triumvirate. What's the Rome triumvirate?
It was Octavian, a really wealthy guy. I forget his name off the top of my head.
Okay.
And I believe Mark Antony.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then same thing, kind of like it devolved, like because each one wanted to be the sole ruler.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, it just opens the door for this, like all this political backdoor dealing and interesting politics, not just.
Yeah, for sure. I think he was definitely probably setting up a storyline for Sia Fel, the daughter of Rowan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. She was definitely going to be.
Yeah, it seemed like she was going to be like a pretty major character in the future, but like. Yeah.
We'll never know.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We'll never know where that went. The Mandalorians, too, they were pretty low key, but it looked like they were ramping up as if they were going to make an appearance again.
Oh, so were they? Okay.
Who knows? Who knows what.
You know,
John, if you're out there listening.
Last couple of years, there's been rumors of reviving Legends.
I've heard it. I wish it were true, but I can't let my delicate heart.
I mean, it would be great if John Ostrander could come back and maybe finish
his work.
Finish one more arc or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Give us a little more.
Yeah, see where the triumvirate would end up.
Yeah.
But anyways, just kind of interesting. I think even though it didn't maybe end the way we want to, like with a more satisfying ending, I think it was. At least it was good.
Yeah.
ended well, like on a good note, you know, not on like just bad writing or a bad story. Yeah. And bad characters or anything. At least in my opinion, maybe I'm sure there's people out there that.
Yeah. Everyone has their own, especially with Star Wars. You'll find the divisiveness of the fan base. But as far as I've read, just the general temperature online, it seems to be pretty well received.
Yeah.
And like I said, I loved it enough to be, you know, waiting for each issue to come out.
Yeah, totally.
So,
yeah. Now I thought it was kind of interesting. I kind of wondered if there was a couple 40K references.
Mm-hmm.
So Warhammer 40K. So obviously there's Imperial Knights in Warhammer. They're not exactly the same Imperial Knights that of the Fel Empire, but there is some similarities, like the operator. An Imperial Knight in Warhammer 40K is like this huge, I don't know, 30 foot, 40 foot tall
engine.
Yeah, it's kind of like a bigger space marine.
A mech warrior.
Yeah. But they're not as big as Titans.
No.
Yeah, they're still like a lot smaller than Titans, but they're operated by one like very elite
pilot.
And usually they're like from an aristocratic family is what I read.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was kind of interesting that, like, I don't know if the name is probably by accident, but there was also, I found there's a Peleon class Star Destroyer called the Warhammer.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say that maybe independently, that might be kind of you might be reaching.
Yeah.
Because like Imperial Knights could also exist. Like the Holy Roman Empire had Imperial Knights as
well. That's true. Yeah.
So it could have been like a historical reference, but when you throw in the Warhammer, again,
yeah,
but weapon of war in itself. But
the only thing is, both the Warhammer and the Imperial Knights, I believe, both came from Ostrander.
Yeah,
so it just makes me wonder if he was like throwing in some
little nods,
Easter eggs or something. Yeah,
it's possible.
Yeah,
they're both kind of like common enough that they could be historical references, but at the same time, it's definitely. I'll say it's plausible.
Yeah,
for my part.
Also, like kind of in the beginning of the episode, some of the reforms that Jagged Fel brought in, one of them was called the Victory Without War policy, which I thought was kind of interesting, because what they did was basically like invest money and infrastructure into like all these star systems and sectors and planets to buy their loyalty, basically.
I was getting very strong China vibes from that.
So no, it's actually very similar to like the post World War II period when with the Bretton Woods Agreement to buy oil for U.S. dollars, because then America started like investing in all these countries around the world and started defending the trade routes with their navy, and so like this is almost exactly. And then the U.S. started the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which were explicitly to help developing nations.
Well, help in quotes.
Yeah, quote unquote help. I think these are very shadowy organizations that are very difficult to audit, and I think are probably very corrupt if we could look under the hood. Be that as it may, to me, it seemed like that was sort of the idea that he was trying to get across with this sort of victory without war policy, because that is kind of what the Americans were trying to. They were trying to make an era of peace with no war, right? And so they were trying to get the whole world to adopt the quote unquote rules based world order, liberal world order, right? Which actually FDR used to call the New World Order. And that's where the New World Order came from. But then that became sort of associated with like conspiracy theories. But anyways, just interesting tidbits on history. But you did say China. And yes, so China's Belt and Road Initiative is basically the same thing. They're copying what America did with the IMF and the World Bank. And they're trying to do the same thing, but I think it's probably going to blow up in their face because a bunch of those countries that are going bankrupt that they've lent money to. So,
and it's not like the American version either is necessarily going great
at the moment. Yeah. So it went better for a few decades.
At first.
Yeah, it worked for like a while.
Lasted longer.
Yeah. But so anyways, just some interesting like...
real life.
It seemed like they're weaving in like things that have happened in real life, which often happens. We talk about on the show a lot, like real world examples of where you would maybe think that they got inspiration from, right? So
yeah.
Anyways, you wanted to bring up this next point here.
So kind of bringing it back to the Imperial Knights there. Very cool faction. Very unique.
So I was going to bring this up too. Like the Imperial Knights are actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they're one of my favorite things. Institutions. They're like the way I love clone troopers. I like the Imperial Knights.
Yeah. They're really cool.
They're almost like secular force users.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is an interesting take too. They're very pragmatic, which is also the Fell Empire is described as pragmatic and utilitarian, right?
Yeah.
Again, trying to be more of this gray rather than like cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
Not to say that utilitarianism doesn't have its faults either.
Yeah.
And could lead to its own moral
for sure
degradations. But and it's interesting too that their role, even though they're bodyguards of the Emperor, it's almost like they have more an allegiance to their imperial constitution rather than the head of state themselves.
Yeah.
And even will carry out an execution against the head of state if they go rogue.
Yeah. Which I actually thought was crazy that they, one, there's two things, like the emperor shared power equally with the Council of Moffs, right?
Yeah.
A separation of powers is like also a big difference from the previous
sole tyrannical ruler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a totalitarian state. But then also the policy of like if an emperor goes to the dark side, he is to be executed, which is kind of funny.
By his own bodyguards. So I was getting like, again, kind of the Roman aesthetic of like Praetorian guards in there, like murdering their own emperors that they're supposedly charged to protect. Yeah. Probably not for the same positive reasons. Obviously, they want to install their own and, you know, whatever politics of Rome at the time. But
ultimately, that's the reason why Rowan Fell got executed by his own guard. Like, and it's cool because his guard was like loyal to his mission. He wasn't like betraying.
Which, incidentally, like, so cool. Well, not cool, I don't know, cool, but a real life example would be, again, with constitutionalism, like, in theory, your military swears allegiance to the Constitution,
in
the United States, at least.
Yeah.
And not the head of state, right? Even though the president is a commander-in-chief, the soldiers are sworn to the Constitution.
Yeah.
So you could have
police officers. It's like the same thing, is it not?
Possibly. I'm not sure about police so much, but you have that split of like, if our commander in chief goes rogue, not necessarily that they're given the charge to execute, but that would exist in theory.
Yeah.
In Canada, however, the military swears allegiance to the Queen.
Oh, I know. It's
but not the Canadian head of state. So in theory,
yeah, the British head.
Well, I guess the king now.
The king.
So if the king went rogue and called in all his former colonial powers and any nation that still swears allegiance to the to
Australia,
the crown,
New Zealand, Jamaica,
the Commonwealth nations, then the king could theoretically like wield the great like greatest combined military and even turn it against the people of the countries that they live in.
100%
Just an interesting
on paper experiment. on paper, I think that's actually how it works. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not that would actually happen.
Yeah.
Who knows? But again, that is a point for constitutionalism where you're sworn to an unwavering document so that if your head of state does go rogue or something crazy happens, they can.
Yeah, it's better to be like swearing to like principles and ideals than just
than people.
People, yeah.
Because people will always fail.
That's right, yeah.
I did want to. So for all the praise we're keeping on this story arc, I do have some critiques and I might as well air them now because I don't know if I'll have another opportunity. So one thing that I didn't like is the lack of technological evolution. And I know this comes up a lot. I just found it strange how, especially coming from the same author, you have really weird technology from Tales of the Jedi era.
Right. Or Dawn of the Jedi.
Dawn of the Jedi, sorry, yeah. And then, although Tales of the Jedi also had weird tech, but not to get into that. And then, you know, you have these like stylistic shifts between like episode 1 and 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
And then, but there's this consistency as well from like KOTOR to episode 1 where like buildings look very much the same. You couldn't.
Well, that
really
was one of my criticisms of KOTOR. It's too similar.
Too similar, right. Yeah. And this is my criticism now of Legacy, which is we're 100 years later. Stormtrooper armor is unchanged, which is the one thing I'll give Disney a point for, is evolving the Stormtrooper armor to this more tactical, sleek-looking armor.
Okay,
I do like.
Yeah, actually,
I do like
it didn't
that.
Look that bad. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm not
but
a big
it's still,
fan of the
it
face.
It was still like Stormtrooper.
Yeah, and enough that you could instantly identify, right? In the same way the clones evolved, you know, from phase 1 to phase 2. Then you have these all these in-between styles of armors coming out in these different TV shows, and then finally the standard Stormtrooper. And then now, 100 years later, they're still wearing the same Stormtrooper armor. So either Stormtrooper armor is the best technology we could hope
doesn't
for.
Doesn't need to be improved.
Right, exactly. Or something.
Why reinvent the wheel?
Right, exactly. So that was my one kind of critique.
Yeah.
And like even the TIE fighters evolved. They have like cool new design.
Okay.
They have like more triangular wings.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And they're like the ball still. You could tell what it is.
Yeah.
And like Star Destroyer's still basic triangle shape, just slightly.
Yeah, they
varied.
Look a little different.
Yeah.
The new one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But it was really cool because you do follow a Stormtrooper squad pretty closely, at least in one of the arcs that I remember.
Okay.
And but I liked that ground level boots on the ground, mud and muck.
Yeah.
Like it was really cool because it just took you out of the main story and you just kind of followed this squad for a while.
Yeah.
And you know, they'd take off their helmets and stuff. You also saw more aliens, which speaks to the reduced xenophobia.
Right, right.
You had aliens actually serving in the Stormtrooper Corps.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you did with the xenophobic empire, but they were definitely like minuscule and rare.
Yeah.
Very rare and like probably charged with very specific tasks and not treated very well within the ranks or given the choice of military service or execution, right? So but these are like willing combatants.
Yeah.
So I did like that. But yeah, it was just again, the one I'll score credit where it's due, and Disney has credit for evolving the Stormtrooper armor. Their TIE fighters look exactly the same. So if we could take their Stormtrooper armor and just transplant them into the Legacy.
Now, I do wonder, like, maybe not with TIE fighters, but with a ship like a Star Destroyer, like, hypothetically, couldn't that ship last, like, 200 years?
Yeah.
You could maintain it?
I think, in theory, like same like a lot of our battleships, right? Like they're quite
they're old,
but it's also because it costs so much to replace them.
Yeah,
Which would make sense, right? And in space, like, I don't know. make them last as long as possible, get as much life cycle out of them. So again, that's not so much my critique as the ships, as the as the front line, boots on the ground, battle armor.
Yeah.
Although stormtrooper armor will always look good regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. Something I kind of liked about the whole like Fel Empire idea is just like, you know, creating like an actual culture, you know, and like a tradition and a dynasty. Like there is something kind of cool about like you can kind of build more and more on top of that. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of a cool interpretation of what like a new empire could look like.
You know?
So, yeah, anyways, any more thoughts on the Fel dynasty there?
I have some thoughts on the One Sith, but I don't, it's not specific to the Fel dynasty. So maybe we'll save it for a different episode.
Yeah. I think we have, in the crate episode, we went over.
We talk about the One Sith.
The
yeah.
One Sith quite a bit. Yeah. Yeah. Why you want to do a whole episode on the One Sith?
We'll see how much there is to talk about.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. Anyways, just wanted to give a couple shout outs. One to our new patron, Sato. Want to thank you very much, sir or madam, for your contribution. If anyone is interested in helping support the show, help pay the bills, you can go to patreon.com/starlores. And for $3 a month, you can have access to all of our bonus material and the exclusive groups as well. I also want to thank the writer of this episode's ad read, was Gerald91 on our Discord group. He wrote the ad for this episode. So if anyone else is interested in writing ads, you've heard how we do them. Usually they're like a parody of an in-universe company and try to make it as funny as you can.
Yeah.
You know, but think of like ridiculous ads you might see on,
or you can make up a product or something that's believable within the context of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be like an in-universe. You have to be in-universe.
Yeah, from that perspective.
But also, if you have something you want in real world and want to pay us to run your ad, we'll do that too.
We also do real ads. You can actually sponsor the show.
Yeah, if you want to actually sponsor. Otherwise, if you want to write a fake ad, in-universe Star Wars ad, we like adding those because it's kind of fun. So.
Yeah.
You can write that and send it in to us. You could just email us or DM us on any of our socials and we'll have a look at it. We're not guaranteeing we will post it, but if we like it enough, we will.
All right.
Cool. All right. On that note, we shall see y'all later.